Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Hi, I'm Lori Nickel, filling in for J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I'm here with Jim Ozarski. You're up and early this morning. Did you find your morning hours or breakfast hours?
I did find my breakfast hours today.
You walked into the office today looking like... I don't know. You weren't happy. You're not a morning person. I see that now.
No, only if there's a tea time involved.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us here. We're going to cover a couple of things today on the Journal Sentinel podcast for the Milwaukee Bucks. We're going to cover the news. We're going to recap last season. We're going to look ahead a little bit. We're going to talk about Giannis, of course. And then we're going to talk about a couple of subjects that I've wanted to get to for quite a while. I want to look at the roster depth, particularly with a couple of people. And then we're going to look at league news and some other questions I have for you, Jim. So I hope you're ready.
I am ready.
Okay. The Bucks are 51-20, first in the East. They clinched the playoffs with Boston. And there were some new injuries this week. Myers Leonard had a calf injury. Jay Crowder had a calf injury. And Goran had a knee injury. The calf injury is quite prevalent right now. What's going on, do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? I mean, Wesley Matthews just came off a calf strain for a while. I mean, it's, you know, soft tissue. I talked to Grayson Allen. He just came back from right plantar fasciitis and some soreness in his foot. And what he said, it was sort of there. It started to get a little worse, and they looked at the schedule and said, hey, he missed 2 games, but he had 6 days off. And so he's like, at this time of year, 11 games left. I mean, they're kind of running out of that wiggle room of, oh, you know, can you try to play through or whatnot? I don't know if that's the case with all of these, Lori, but I would venture to guess it's okay. They need to be ready for mid-April. Let's get these soft tissues issues corrected as soon as possible. That's my gut on Jay Crowder, because he's been out for a little bit. Myers Leonard was new. You don't want to say that's unsurprising, but considering he hadn't played basketball in 2 years and then suddenly played a bunch of minutes on that road trip at the end, I don't know. That makes sense to me. Goran Dragic is a little more interesting, Lori. He had missed his last 4 games in Chicago with left knee soreness. Mm-hmm. So he came in with this issue. When I talked to him in Washington, his first game with the team, he was like, oh, it's doing better. I wish I was in better shape, but it's doing better. Mm-hmm. He said he had a target date, but didn't want to name it, which is probably good at this point, because Mike Budenholzer was last week thought, all right, Goran's available. And then suddenly he's just been out. So, yeah, that one is a little touch and go. I wonder, I mean, he's running out of time here to get some court time with this team.
Right, for sure. Okay. That's interesting. Myers Leonard, too, he had 10 points in that Pacers loss. And then he's hurt the next week. And he was hurt the next game. And he was kind of bummed about that loss, too. He's like, I finally had a great game. And then, you know, look at the final result. So it does seem like they're being caught really conservative, yes, as usual. So that makes a lot of sense. I want to look back last week to the Bucks losing here at home to the Pacers. I called it maybe the one bad, quote unquote, bad loss they had all year. I didn't think that they should necessarily have lost that game. And I'm not going to blame you, but I'm going to tease you. Did you ask in a press conference, or did somebody say, the Bucks' 3-point defense is no longer an issue? And then in the Pacers game, the Pacers were 22 of 46 from 3-point range. So I had to tweak whoever that was.
That was me.
Oh, that was.
Yeah, because they had come in, but at one point, I mean, they were second, but maybe by percentage points of opposing field goal 3-point percentage. We haven't talked about that all year. I mean, they changed that, right? They changed their emphasis to start the year, and then go figure. Golden State, I think, to me, is always a push aside. Like, they're going to hit a bunch of threes on anybody. But, yeah, Indiana, credit to them. Jordan Wara, actually, with the go-ahead three-pointer, and then George Hill with a couple daggers late. The Pacers have just, you know, the Bucks were up by 30 at halftime in Indiana and had to, like, hang on to win. There's some about that Pacers team that's just not a good fit for the Bucks.
Mm-hmm. And plus, those guys were on a mission, too. I don't care what anybody says. Jordan and George were playing. I mean, Jordan was so fired up, too. So it was kind of fun to see. Okay. Looking ahead. All right. Next week, or this week, excuse me, the Bucks play here at home against the Spurs. And then they have a back-to-back at Utah and Denver, which is the second of that back-to-back. And Denver is first place, I think, in the West. Yes. Is there anything coming up this week that you're looking to as a reporter to learn something more about this team that you don't already know?
Wow, that I don't already know. That's a good question. The back-to-back's hard because Chris Middleton and Joe Ingles, Joe's played a couple. Chris hasn't played any.
Oh, he hasn't had any this year?
No, they've been intentional with not doing that. So is this the time for that? Is this one of those where they just punt on back-to-backs with Chris? What's the point?
Right, the playoffs are never back-to-back.
Right, so that will be interesting. I think the fact that Jay Crowder's injured and Goran Dragic is injured, like, that's what I don't know, is what is Mike Budenholzer going to do with all of these guys? Because I don't think they're all going to play in the playoffs. I know that. Like, they can't. to me, that feels matchup-based. And I would have been interested to see, like, do the Bucks sort of, like, rest, quote-unquote, the day before the Utah game and then go for it in Denver? Because that's Denver is a potential finals matchup. But the Bucks rarely care that much about a regular season game. They just sort of do what they do. I guess for me, it's still continuing to see Chris Middleton play 30-plus minutes, continue to improve physically. I mean, he was playing one-on-one with Pascal Siakam all game against Toronto. Mm. Interesting decision for Mike Budenholzer. And this was even after Scottie Barnes went out with an injury. He didn't move Giannis over to Siakam. And depending who you follow, who you talk to, Chris was okay, but, like, to me, comebacks from knee injuries aren't linear. Like, that progress isn't linear. To me, that was Mike Budenholzer saying, all right, Chris, like, all game long, you've got a guy who, you know, maybe in the first round of the playoffs we're going to see. So I guess for me, that will be it, will be Chris continuing to play that many minutes and how they just sort of continue to gel with the big three. Because really, Laurie, still, he's only played five games at like 30 plus minutes as a starter. I mean, it's still a really small sample size.
It really is. Okay, that's a great answer. Chris Middleton, by the way, last night had 20 points in 32 minutes in the Milwaukee Bucks victory over the Toronto Raptors. And I really want to talk to you about Giannis Antetokounmpo for that game. Giannis had another triple-double. Was it his fifth this year or fourth?
Fourth. I mean, he tried
the
to
real
get five.
One. No. Sorry. We're going to be honest here. And this is four. Okay. So last night, Giannis had 22 points, 11 boards, and 10 assists. There's a couple of things to discuss here. Number one, he was 9 of 9 from field goal range and 1 of 1 from 3-point range. And he was perfect. And one of your reporter friends, I think his name is Jack from CBS.
Jack Maloney,
Jack Maloney pointed out that's just the 13th time ever in NBA history that somebody was perfect. Was it in a triple-double?
Yeah.
Was that the caveat? I thought that was a really great stat. Of course, Giannis's answer was so vanilla, like, oh, I'd never take it for granted, right? But how special, of all the basketball that you and I have seen, I've never seen, I mean, Mike Budenholzer called it like a perfectly pitched game, or hate baseball. What was that?
Like a perfect game.
A perfect game, a pitch. I don't think I'll ever see something like that again. Do you?
I mean, the only one that comes close is when Giannis won the MVP in the All-Star game 2 years ago. He was like 16 for 16.
Stop. Right there. In a real game.
But that's the point. It's like, like that was playtime.
Right.
And he did hit a couple of threes in that one to his credit. But like, you know, this one, the 9 for 9 is really interesting because he's been averaging about 22 shots a game.
Yeah.
But clearly Toronto, you know, he was looking to pass early. It wasn't needed for him to shoot 20 because, as you said, Chris Middleton scored 20 points. Berg Lopez outscored the Raptors by himself in the fourth quarter. Look, of those 13 that you mentioned there, Nikola Jokic has two of them. And one of them was this year. I think he was like a 5 for 5. So I don't know. I know Giannis doesn't know that. Like, he doesn't know in game what someone did. But I feel like there's this sort of broader, if you can do it, I can do it too, type of thing. I don't know. I mean, if you were to tell him, hey, Jokic had done this twice, you know what I mean? Like, there's, I don't know. I definitely believe he has no idea that it happened, that he was part of the club. But he'd smile at that. Like, I can do that too.
For sure. Right. Side note on this, Chris Middleton also had 5 assists last night. And I guess that's his 5th straight game of 5 assists or more. So he's coming back to his passing self. Okay, back to Giannis. The thing that I think is interesting, Giannis claims that he came to the Bucks-Toronto game last night not knowing that by starting and playing and going to work as usual, he would get 712 games under his belt, which is the most games ever in a Bucks uniform. He said he wasn't aware of breaking Junior Bridgman's record. And then, of course, in the post-game press conference, he deflected all of his personal pride again and said, we're just going to keep moving forward. But again, maybe in league notes, this isn't a big deal, but in Milwaukee, it's a huge deal. And again, I don't know that anybody's going to break that. I just don't know that somebody, I think it's special that he's still here, that he started here as an 18-year-old, played here when he should have been playing college basketball. I've been dying to always ask him, by the way, if he ever, like watching the NCAA tournament, would he have ever wanted to play somewhere college basketball? Have you ever asked him that question?
I haven't.
We got to ask him because I always wonder if he missed out on that. But anyway, I think it's a monumental achievement. Do you think, this is a trick question, do you think it matters to him?
Yes.
Yeah. Because that was his game ball that he was cradling at the...
Yeah, and I don't think he got a game ball for a triple-double.
No, well, it was marked both. Okay. It had notations for both. But yeah.
Yeah.
But he's just not going to
own. Not in that moment. And I know he does say after his career is over, he'll look back at stuff. But I do think he... Look, in Brooklyn, when he broke Kareem's team scoring record, he did the same thing. But but also as he's walking in, and this was in a media room full of people, so that I'm not divulging off background stuff. He knew how many points Kareem had scored in a career. Mm-hmm. So while he was very proud of breaking Kareem's record, he also knows that it's 30,000 plus. Mm-hmm. He knew he broke the assist record this year. You know, so stuff like that, I think, does matter. And I think Chris Middleton, of the two of them, Chris Middleton's the only one who sort of acknowledged, like, when he broke Ray Allen's 3-point record. And he was very happy to do that. And also very happy to say, this will be the one I have that Giannis doesn't. You know?
Right.
But to your point, Lori, I mean, it is 10 years. He's going to add at least another season in 10 plus games, if not more. And so,
that's fine.
So that's something, look, team players aren't really playing decade plus with franchises anymore. I think it's why Brooke Lopez is still the all-time leading scorer in Nets history.
Exactly.
It's just because he was there about 10 years.
Yeah.
Close to. Yeah. So He should definitely be proud of it. I think his Instagram later showed that he was proud of it by posting that he, you know, did such things. So, you know what? Go over to jazzonline.com. You can look. We did a series, Lori, Ben Steele, and myself on Giannis, some stories on 10 years in Milwaukee, and this is just part of that legacy.
Indulge me for one more thing about Giannis, and you might be mad at me, actually, about this, so don't. To try not to be too mad. But I think Giannis's press conferences are a must listen. If you're a basketball fan, just in general, I always learn something. And it was your line of questioning last night, Sunday night, that I thought was the most intriguing. You asked him about his passing. And what was most interesting is that he talked about how his instincts have changed. Like we know that he's slowed down. He's mentioned that many times, but what I didn't know is that he slows down now because he's testing the bluff. He thinks people are faking it. And I thought that was so interesting. His quote was like, I wait 1 second and sometimes they just leave, you know, and it's like he thinks he's facing a double team, but they're ready to just like put in the work, show the face and then not really follow through on it. So he's going to challenge the bluff on that. And the other thing he said is, he used to hate a crowd. Remember, you did the follow-up question, have your instincts changed over time? And he said, you know, I didn't like crowds 5 years ago. So he would get the ball inside. He would see, you know, not even a wall yet, just two people and boom, that ball would go out. What are you working on with that? Because I think that's really, really interesting stuff. I'm going to watch him differently now to see where his eye movement is, what his body language is, if he's really trying to test people. It is a very mature way to play his position. So are you working on something with the story? Or
so there's two things with that. One is it's natural with Toronto because I feel like the Raptors were that team that had the Giannis wall in 18-19 to get to the finals. And so I think Toronto is always the gold standard, if you will, because no one else has really been able to do it as well since. And I think the bubble's a whole other conversation.
For sure.
But so I think there was a natural element there because Toronto just sort of, to me, still does it the best. Also,
explain to people the wall.
It's bringing essentially multiple defenders up to, I view it as the free throw line. It right. could be a little further now. I think that's why he's worked on his jump shot and that elbow game. But
it's
risky. Yeah, I still think it's the free throw line.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And it's multiple defenders.
At least three.
And Toronto's all like 6'7" to 6'9" guys with wingspans. Siakam's he's like 6'10" maybe. So right. It's just really long and wide and mm-hmm. guys who aren't afraid to take his contact. In the two games that he's played against the Raptors this year, he's had triple doubles. The first one in Toronto was the 30-20-10 game. And I just feel like he's at least against the Raptors more willing to pass the ball out. Now on a broader level. He set the all time assist record for this team. And I don't know if that's something anyone would have thought of. Maybe he thought he would do that over scoring 10 years ago. But he's that the next step along the line of the point forward. You know, the name of this podcast goes back to Marcus Johnson and Paul Pressey. And back then it was, if you were 6'7",
right,
you were huge to be handling the ball. And Giannis is 7 feet. So I think that's part of it, too, is like here's this guy who's sort of initiating offense. And how has he learned to do that in 5 years in the sense of Toronto, but maybe even a decade if you go back to when he was 6'8" and John Hammond was evoking the name of Paul Pressey, mm-hmm. you know. So I think it's definitely an interesting to see him develop in that way, even if he's not as like a refined of a point guardish. Whatever. I mean, it's still pretty high level.
You and I tend to be in the same old school journalism thing where we don't like to put media in the stories and stuff, but this is a podcast, so I can do it here, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I learned this during the pandemic. I love covering this team because everybody's so smart. I mean, and I wondered how you felt about it too. You can ask Giannis the questions you asked him up at a podium in like a sterile environment where it's just, there's no personality, there's no back and forth, there's no exchange, and you get that kind of answer. Or you could ask him, you know, by his locker and get that kind of answer. But the thing that I love about covering the Bucks is everybody's smart. Everybody's got good insight. Everybody's willing to share it. And it's been really a joy. And I learned during the pandemic when we were all on Zoom and I was listening to other press conferences around the league, I'm like, oh my gosh, how does anybody work with this? It's been a minute. We've been journalists for a little bit how would you consider this team just covering them to do your job, to do what you want to do? Are there still barriers or speed bumps in getting what you want to get with this team? Or how would you rate this team in terms of the guys, the players, in covering them and for the stuff that we do in print, which is way more in depth than the stuff, the sound bites that you usually see for two minute sportscasts on TV?
Yeah. I mean, to your point, I mean, part of the genesis of those questions for Giannis came from Grayson Allen.
See?
And yeah, his, and talking to him.
He's so sharp.
And that, and not that you wouldn't have a Giannis passing question as it were, but the way Grayson described how playing with Giannis was so clear that it was like, oh, that's just a different way to phrase it or think it. And they're all like that. Now, I think it'd probably take a little more to get Drew, because I think Drew, there's a part of him that's, wants to be short, if you will. He wants to give you like a couple words and then you kind of got to pull it out a little bit. But no, they're all, I think every guy on the team, Javon, you'd probably have to work a little hard to get stuff out of Javon too. But that's not on them. I think they know exactly what is happening and can describe it in any way you want, I guess. Is that the right way to say it? Like, I think where it's harder for this group is maybe more of the emotional stuff. They're all very clinical. Like, it's basketball is a job. And
it is, though, for real.
I mean, Wesley Matthews is 36 years old.
Yeah.
Brook Lopez is 34. Right? Like, Grayson's the young guy, and he's 27, 28. Bobby's the young guy at 27.
Right.
8 years in. Right. So, and I understand Marjan, but, like, the guys, the rotation players. So, they're all, like, hardened veterans of the media game, of the game itself. So, I feel like, you're right, Lori, on a basketball level, probably the best team in that way. Like, football guys, like, I thought Aaron Rodgers was always, if you could get into football with him, it could be good. Like, coverages and what he's seeing and routes running. But that was hard because there was so much other stuff. I thought Davante Adams was really good at that. If you wanted to get into back shoulder or no look or late hands, you could. Linemen, I think, are great at that. But yeah, like, from a roster 1 to 11, the Bucks are so good at answering those things. And they're not afraid to do it in a press conference setting and kind of give you that, which is not easy. Because up on that stage, they could easily be, let me go surface level and
totally right.
Let me get off of here.
I mean, I think the Milwaukee media group is pretty good, though, too. I mean, it's a smaller group, so they know some of the reporters. And I just feel really lucky to do that. Okay. Now, we're going to get to some of the stuff that I've wanted to talk about for a long time. I believe that the Milwaukee Bucks have what they need to win a championship this year. Whether or not they do it or not is a whole other topic, but I believe they have the caliber of players. And so, let's say I'm right. I want to talk about the roster depth, because I think we're getting to that point of the season where figuring that out, managing that, and getting to the April playoffs is the most important part. There's going to be some rest management games and some hardcore games where they're still going to be fighting. So we're going to start from the bottom, and we already know about Giannis. We know about Chris Middleton. We know about Brooke Lopez. We know about Drew Holiday. We've talked about them a lot. I want to talk about some of the other guys. Let's start with the DNPs. You know, and there's Marjan, there's Wesley for some of those because of injuries, AJ Green, Lindell. I think Marjan Beauchamp, you know that. I think he's a player. With the Herd, he's able to get some playing time. I think he's had five games. He's averaging 18.6 points, six rebounds in five games up there. But I just don't think we're going to see him, not even in management stuff this year. That makes me a little bit sad because I really just – I've only felt strongly about two people like that in my life. And one was Dwayne Wade when I saw him play. He was 17 years old in Chicago. And the other is Beauchamp. Do you think any of those guys, of the guys that I mentioned, who do you think has the best shot of contributing – meaningful minutes to the point where it's on the court? They are all contributing in practice in some way or another. That's meaningful. But in terms of games, is there any potential there?
I think Marjan's time was at the start of the year when Middleton, Ingles, and Connaughton were hurt. I mean, I could see them trying to get him in late if they've got kind of blowout situations. I just think once the Jay Crowder move was made, that was that other wing, and there's just not enough time. And now Crowder's been hurt, and he still hasn't played because Wesley's come back. So I think it's just a matter of they like him. I know for a fact that they love that he was able to play as much as he did early. Because think about it, if all those guys were healthy, Marjan might have played very, very few minutes to start this year. So yeah. I think it's really just, you know, redshirt year, lack of a better phrase, because it's just a team, the way it's constructed, to win a championship, a rookie, I don't know what a rookie could do for Mike Budenholzer to make them think he could contribute to a title-winning team.
That's so true.
Like, in real minutes.
Yeah.
Because, of course, so he contributed.
Right.
But it's in terms of, like, that playoff stretch, yeah, I just don't see. And then the other guys, yeah, they'll be around for practice. I don't believe two-ways are eligible for the postseason. So once Myers-Leonard was signed, that took any chance of A.J. Green's contract being converted as being that 15th guy. And that was a question, too. I mean, I thought A.J., as an undrafted rookie, showed that he can make threes in this league.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was a real – I thought, like, okay, if they keep that 15 spot open, but clearly the Bucks felt, you know what, let's make sure we're good with our bigs if something happens.
Right. That's a great point. A side note on that. So Bobby Portis told this story on Thanasis Antetokounmpo's podcast, which you should also listen to. But he said his rookie year, he had his first 15 games were like, did not play. And it was so frustrating to him. He still remembers it to this day. And Portis talked about then he got in like the 16th game and he scored like 10 points in 6 minutes and just went crazy on the coach, like, play me all the time, you know, and all that. But even when, and he considered that hard. So I can't imagine what it's like to just sit game after game after game. And, but you, there, the thing that Portis mentioned was that he learned from the veterans around him. He crafted his game. He developed a lot of his individual moves. And so maybe Beauchamp and some of these other guys, well, the younger guys have that opportunity to learn from, I mean, what's a really loaded locker room in terms of experience and all that, which you don't say normally here in Milwaukee. Right. I can't even believe we're saying that. Okay. I hate it when people do this to me, so I'm going to do this to you. Ready? Here's a trick question. You didn't look at my notes,
did
you? You better not. Okay. Guess which Milwaukee Bucks player has played the most games this season?
Grayson. No, Brooke Lopez.
Wrong. Okay. Second question, and I'll give you the answer. I know you're looking
play
at
the
me.
The most games? Is that Brooke Lopez?
I could be wrong, but I looked it up just before you got here. Okay. Who is second on the Bucks team in steals? We know that Drew Holiday is number one with almost two steals on average per game. Who's second on the Bucks team in steals?
Steals per game?
Steals per game.
Well, Giannis is down in his defensive numbers, so I'll go with Javon Carter.
Okay. Same guy. Javon Carter
That's right.
has
Javon
71.
Carter hasn't missed a game.
71 games.
That's right.
And he's second on the team in steals. So I want to talk about the bench mob. Do you even hear the term bench mob anymore? No, I don't hear
it. Pat tried to like keep it going because George
was
here, but I feel like they've had enough of a turnover that's yeah.
Okay. So, but of the quote unquote bench mob, somebody else come up with a cool nickname. There's Javon Carter, Pat Connaughton, Wesley Matthews, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, and Goran Dragic. Now, I am working on a big Javon Carter story, so if you will put up with me, let me work on that this week and write it. So he is a really much more interesting story. I knew there was something there. I didn't know there was this much there, so stay tuned on that. But of those guys, again, to me, it speaks to a lot of depth. Everybody can contribute something, right? Pat Connaughton told you last week in a press conference after practice, it's not just about understanding your roles. It's about playing your role the best. And he understands that very well. But who among these guys, I mean, we know Javon Carter is a huge contributor, but who else among here could be in this next month, show Budenholzer something to, you know, these games in the playoffs? It's going to be a whole different season. I swear, everything's going to change. It's going to become a bloodbath. There's going to be the scoring's going to go way down. The physicality is going to go way up. Who among these guys do you think has the most potential to show something in the next month to get maybe more minutes in the playoffs? If there's anybody.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Wesley Matthews because of last year. Now, I think Grayson Allen's a better player than last year.
He's a starter. We're going to get to him.
Right. But, well, at the end of last year, Grayson started all season until the final month when Wesley Matthews started.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's right.
So that change happened at the end of the year, and then that continued through the playoffs. Now, obviously, Chris Middleton got hurt, so Grayson, of course, had a starting role against Chicago. Assuming health, though, that's what I'm curious about. I do, again, I think Grayson's a better player now. I think he's earned a different level of trust with Mike Budenholzer. So that I'll say Matthews in that. I think he played a lot when the season started. Then some injuries kind of cropped up. Now he's working his way back. And that's just only off recent history, Lori. Right. I think really this team is set up for playoff matchups. So I don't think, like, Bobby and Joe are coming in together in rotations. It's not like Bobby is the sixth man.
Yeah.
It's Joe and Bobby.
Right.
That's if the starting five is healthy and intact. And then Pat comes in. Right?
Right.
So that's interesting. But I don't think that's going to change. Like, Joe Ingles isn't going to suddenly start, for instance. Bobby's not going to start. Like, again, does Jay Crowder? Yeah, like, so, you know, when Jay's healthy, again, I know people are like, they waited 9 months for Jay Crowder, right. And then Jay Crowder doesn't play against certain teams or matchups or whatever. I think that's the thing. I think it's going to be a matchup-based thing. So, for me, if you're going to talk about the last 11 games, Wesley's the only one I can see maybe having a different role than we've seen. But, again, Grayson should start the rest of the year. And should start start in the playoffs. We'll see against certain matchups. But I guess that would be the answer to that for me.
Side question on Joe Ingles. I didn't follow the NBA too much, so I didn't know much about him until he got here. And I understand what he provides offensively. He's had a season high of 17 points this year, and he's had a season high of 10 assists. We know what he can do offensively. Is he... I need to phrase this correctly. Is he sufficient for what Bud wants on defense, though? Because in the end, when Budenholzer keeps certain people, even in matchup situations, he's always thinking defense first. He just doesn't assume they're going to take care of things offensively. And what do you think about Joe Ingles' defense in this system now and his strengths?
Yeah, I think, I do think there's a level of trust there already. The fact that, like, you can't, like, Joe isn't the quickest guy. We all know that. He'll tell us. Just like Chris isn't. But the two of them together, you've got two guys who are 6'8". Bud loves that.
Why?
I mean, it goes to that length as well, mm-hmm. and that height. And yes, Joe Ingles might get quote unquote beat off the dribble, but with the Bucks and Brook Lopez and Giannis back there, that's not a big of a problem for them. If they shade them to where they're supposed to go with their bigs helping. So yeah, you're going to see Joe Ingles on Jason Tatum. Is that what people are wondering? Yeah. Like that's what's going to happen. Sure, Jay Crowder is going to get some of that. Sure, Chris is going to get it. Sure, Wesley's going to get it as well. No one's stopping Jason Tatum. Like, no one. P.J. Tucker didn't stop Kevin Durant. It seems like people forget that.
Right.
But, like, yes, Joe's ability and sort of knowledge on defense, he knows his scout. Like, when he was in Utah before Royce O'Neal got there, Lori, Joe was the one who switched on 1-4. Yes, you've seen Joe Ingles guard Donovan Mitchell at times. This season. Mm. You've seen Joe on some of the guards at times. And he's not the fleetest of foot or quickest of foot, but he kind of knows where to be and how to contest shots. And the Bucks want guys in the mid-range. They don't want them shooting threes. They don't want them in the paint. I think Joe has shown them enough. And he has a symmetry with Chris already, where, again, if you have Jrue Holiday and those two bigs behind you, I do think they feel good about Joe Ingles closing a game defensively if need be.
All right, next couple of games, I'm going to watch the shot chart and the mid-range. And
I'm going to look at that's really, really good insight. Okay. The sixth man, I know, first of all, going back to injuries, I do feel bad for Pat Connaughton. He's had both calves injured, which is really unusual for how athletic he is. And how is it surprising, really, that Jay Crowder is dealing with some injuries? I mean, he
also didn't play for 9 months.
Right. I mean,
it makes
not a
all
shock.
The sense in the world that Myers Leonard and Jay Crowder have had soft tissue.
Yeah, that can be remedied easily enough with rest before they've come.
So the key thing is to not have it recur.
Right.
Once you get to the postseason,
right,
mm-hmm. which obviously is what they're trying to manage,
right. Anything else to add on Bobby Portis? He's 13.8 points per game, 9.6 rebounds per game. To me, he's just remarkable. I mean, so reliable, so stable. Plus, he's a spark plug. Plus, I don't know. Like my new favorite thing is like the top two. I'm trying to figure out the technical fouls on the team, and I think. I think the two guys who are most likely to get technical fouls on the Bucks are going to be Brooke and Bobby. You know, I like the spirited nature. But is there anything else you want to add about Bobby?
Bobby, you know, I'm curious if this sort of new rotation stuff in the depth of the roster hurts his six man chances. Because he was around a double double. He still is.
The award for NBA six man.
Yeah, his minutes have gone down a bit. I mean, and that's part of. Yeah. The deal, as he has said, mm-hmm. You know, so we'll see on that. But he's like Grayson Allen, Lori. I wrote this around Christmas time when they played the Celtics. Like Bobby and Grayson took that series personally. So I think Bobby's a better player than the guy that we saw kind of disappear a little bit in that second round against Boston. And so, yeah, I think come playoff time, again, curious the matchup.
Right.
You know, Bobby might, you know, we all remember he didn't play against Brooklyn in that second round. And then he became a big factor after that. Curious to see.
In the 2021 championship.
In the championship season. So curious to see, you know, how he's used. Because, again, I think his game is much more well-rounded. Like, he's not just shooting a bunch of threes all the time. Like, that, it's still there. But he's not, you know, like last year, Lori, was he 40% from three, but he was putting up a lot.
Yeah.
This year, it seems like that three-pointer is occasional.
Yeah.
You know, which I think may better suit this team in the playoffs.
I don't even watch him on offense. I watch him more on defense because I know he's worked on that since he got here. And I really try to look at his footwork to see where his positioning is or the angle he takes. And that's it, just to challenge a shot, right? Because he's not going to be a big shot blocker. Okay. Now we're finally getting to the invisible starter, Grayson Allen. I've wanted to talk about him forever, and I'm going to arm wrestle you for another story. I really want to do this story later on Grayson Allen, although maybe you do as well. Okay. He has played 65 games, 63 starts. He averages 28 minutes. He shoots 44% from the field, almost 40% from three-point range, but we'll get back to that. 10.6 points a game. All the other stats, excellent free throw shooter at 90%. 2.8 assists a game. Why don't we talk about him more? And I think I know the reason, but let's start. Why? Why don't we talk about he's? Did I tell you? Yeah, 28 minutes a game. He's not a nothing. You know,
he's a starter.
Yeah, I mean, he's a main guy.
And I don't think John Horst, I said it all in our pods leading up to the trade deadline, that they shouldn't trade him. And I think John Horst did not want to move Grayson Allen, as opposed to the other way around of you know, they felt they had to. We don't talk about him because he's the fifth starter on a team that's got a big three. And the fourth guy is probably going to be the defensive player of the year.
Monster, yeah.
So, I mean, generally you're going to be the unknown, the forgotten person. But I think other teams haven't forgotten about him.
Right.
You know, I mean, he was – and we've seen this at times. I forget – I think it was the Philadelphia game, Lori. 20 points in the third quarter it was, or something like that. And then the 76ers was like, wait a minute. We need to pay attention to him. And then – we didn't see Grayson as much. Now, that's because he's the fifth starter. Like, you can pay all the attention in the world to Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, and Giannis. They're going to get theirs. Grayson isn't to that level. He knows that. But it also shows what he can do if given that chance. Again, what we saw in Chicago and what we saw in Boston, right? That's why he's can be sort of forgotten, because in certain matchups, certain instances, he can give you the 15 to 18 or that key 12 points, hit three threes in a row right away. But I think his driving, he maybe get a hockey assist off that where he kicks it out and then gets swung around. But that initial move into the lane actually created some of that space later. Defensively, you know, I wrote about this earlier, Lori, yeah, he has guarded Jimmy Butler and some of these bigger wings. Because I think the change in defense has better suited him, where it's not just help off, and then try to close. I think letting him just sort of stay out there has probably better suited him. I think obviously having Brooke and Giannis together. Like last year, it's easy to forget, Brooke didn't play 60-plus games in Grayson's first year. And then once the playoffs returned, his role changed because there's no Chris. And then you're adjusting. Like, I think there's subtle things like that, Lori, that are easy to forget in the broad view, that when you whittle it down to a 7-game series against the Celtics, people are like, oh, this guy is ABC. So yeah, look, Grayson may not start in the playoffs. I mentioned Wesley Matthews earlier.
Maybe
he does.
Oh,
you know, maybe Wesley starts against the Celtics. I don't know.
Okay.
But maybe Grayson's starts in the Eastern Conference Finals against whomever and has a role. Like I don't know. I think that's why he's forgotten about. But it is a very good point to note that he's like the
vital
starter.
Vital. Yeah.
Since he's been here, he has started almost all of the games.
And he's the one guy who, when it's playoff time, he will flop if he needs to. He's the only guy. I mean, maybe Jay Crowder, if he's playing, will do it again.
Yeah, Jay will.
But Grayson's the only one who will do it to try to draw a foul. And if it works one out of four times, he will go for it every time. I think the potential for growth in his game is at the three-point shot. He only averages about 2 made threes a game.
Drives people crazy. They feel he should shoot way more than he does.
His locker is next to Chris Middleton's locker in the locker room. And when I go over and talk to Grayson and say, you know, anything, Chris is like, yep, you need to shoot that three. Like, why'd you pass up that corner three? And I think there's something to Grayson Allen being kind of still this old school kind of deferring to other people, a little bit of the Drew Holiday, like they're the stars. He thinks he scores in the flow or in bunches, to your earlier point. He thinks he's going to be opportunistic. So I think the potential for growth in his game is to look for his shot more, to take some of the pressure off of his teammates, because it's funny. One of the things that's interesting about him too, that he remarked, is even if he's blowing it in pregame shoot around and he's missing everything, it doesn't even faze him. He feels comfortable. He talked about this back in like November or December, and he still has a good game anyway. So I think there's potential for growth there. Maybe not, this year, but I would look for him to, you know, make some of those more of those shots. Just to wrap up, I had a couple of things. Can we still keep talking? It's 45. Do you think anybody's still listening at this point? Are you awake? Hello? Are you okay? Maybe go drive to the grocery store and listen a little more. Okay. Two more questions that I had. Yeah. In the league, I was interested in the Ja Morant story. He apologized for brandishing, wielding, waving around a gun on Instagram Live. And that's good that he apologized. And this isn't like a character assassination or anything. You can love the person and hate the behavior. But it dawned on me that once again, we don't even talk about stuff like this. Like a normal reporter would be like, hey, coach, hey, team, you know, what do you do to talk about this in orientation meetings back in September or whatever? We don't even address it because it's such a veteran team. So I wanted to ask you about this a little bit. Do you think going to Bucks general manager John Horst, he's obviously assembled a really good, talented roster. How much do you think character is also on his mind, considering the uniqueness in that he's got brothers on the team? You know, he's had a couple of sets of brothers on the team, so family seems to be important. But how much do you think having a certain character, maturity, team first mentality, do you think that's anything with this young GM?
Yeah, I think it's very, important for him. Now, some of that starts with the locker room and your superstar, because it's all about, it was all about building around Giannis and Chris in a way to get this team to a title. And I think Bobby said it best, where you have to have guys who are going to be willing to not play, or to play and then have their minutes cut or their role changed. You mentioned character, and now there's a little off the court stuff there too, but I think that's all part of it. Now, obviously, you know, some players are, you can't, even if there's character questions, the talent is so absurd that you just have to roll with it and you hope things change. Now, obviously Giannis, that's not where he was and is as a superstar. So, I do think that it's clearly, and that's why, look, we asked John about Jay Crowder's situation in Phoenix. Like, look, this dude went to a finals on a 64 win team and was like, peace out. I'm not playing for you anymore.
I'm not like, gonna talk
what, about, right. So what is with that?
Right.
And John didn't divulge those conversations, but he did say, yeah, we needed answers for that. Because he's literally coming from one championship team to another one. And were the rumors true that you didn't like not starting? Because guess what? Here, you're not going to start. So whatever it was, they had to feel good about it. Same thing with Myers Leonard and his situation. There was a reason he was out of the league for 2 years. Be it physical or, you know, the anti-Semitic slur that he used in a video stream. So that the team had to feel good about all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how that's going to fit. And, you know.
Because this isn't a 10-day flirtation anymore. No. Now he's part
of the team. Yeah, now he's part of the team.
Right.
So, yeah, I do think it matters. Now, in my brief history covering John, there hasn't been an opportunity, to my knowledge, of a high, high, high-level superstar talent with other questions that they're having to make a call on. You know, we're talking about like role players and veteran guys who have to make sort of professional adjustments,
right.
You know, but you could go back to Bobby Portis sat in this office, Lori, and talked about the character questions he's had with the incident in Chicago.
Temper.
So, you know, they've done their diligence and clearly it's paid off in a way that has led to a lot of success and very, very few off court.
Yeah.
You know, there have been a couple, but it's been few and far between with some guys.
Right. You know, John Horst did an interview with Bally Sports reporter Zora Stevenson at the beginning of the month. And it's funny, he said that seating was extremely important to him about getting the home court advantage. He brought up that the Bucks are 10-1 in home playoff games the last 2 years. So he's the first one I heard like outright say, yeah, we want this, you know, we need this. So I think you've probably talked to him more than anybody this year, you know, or at least, but has he been around the GM? Has he been to all the road stuff? And do you have access to him? What's your feel for him this year and what he's built?
Yeah, I see John almost regularly on the road. I'm sure there's a few here or there that he misses for scouting reasons or whatever it may be. But no, he's there, like self-scouting, watching the team. That's an interesting stat because that one loss was game six against the Celtics, having to go on the road. And GMs have a different business sense. I'm not going to say the GM would like more home games because that's more revenue to offset some of these tax bills that he's creating with his roster. Right. Maybe. I don't know. Right. I don't think Bud cares as much about that as maybe some other people up the chain. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But no, John's around. And I think that's, again, when you're talking about culture building and team building, if the leaders of the team from the front office on down, like you see John's staff, like they're everywhere all the time. Yeah. I don't know how they're scouting or where they're. Then again, they don't have a lot of first round picks. So maybe they can just spend most of their time pro scouting and seeing their own guys. Right. Because who knows?
It's a good gig if you can get it.
Right. Maybe the guys that they have to scout just aren't, you know, they don't have the picks to make them. But yeah, he's involved. And I would say that probably all goes part of the family culture that he's tried to create.
Wow. Thank you so much for answering all my questions. Talking for 51 minutes. If anybody is still left here, thank you so
much. At Lori Nickel on Twitter, TikTok, all these things, let her know.
Yeah, we're going to start. Maybe we'll take questions sometime for. Yeah. No, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. I like good questions. I don't like gambling questions. So, thank you. Is there anything you wanted to add or anything? I'm not going to ask you what you're mad at today. I don't
want to. No, I would just say, as always, go over to jsonline.com/deal. Give us a shot. It's a good time to do it. We've got Bucks playoff basketball, Lori, and probably 3 months worth. So this will cover all of that. Of course, Brewers opening day, Packers training camp with a brand new quarterback. So sign up for Bucks, but then you also get all this other stuff that's coming up. So jsonline.com/deal.
And you're going to apologize. This was an Aaron Rodgers free safe space, and then you brought him up in the middle of the podcast.
Anyway, no, he's a great. I hope he does well in New York. So, but anyway, thank you so much for listening.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.